This is Health Dose, a podcast from My Michigan Health focusing on different issues related to your health. Our topic today is female urinary incontinence. Here to help with that is Dr. Thomas Minnick. Dr. Minnick specializes in obstetrics and gynecology and sees patients at My Michigan Obstetrics and Gynecology on the campus of My Michigan Medical Center, West Branch. So, Dr. Minnick, let's start today by simply asking, what is female urinary incontinence?
Very simply put, it's leakage of urine, whether it's a few drops or completely emptying your bladder. It's the loss of urine.
And so how common is it?
It's more common than most people think. If you look at age groups, it affects 25% of young women. Women in their middle age, close to 50% of them will suffer from urinary incontinence. And as high as 75% of older patients will have some form of incontinence. 6 to 10% of all nursing home admissions are due to incontinence. The unfortunate problem is 25 to 60% of women with incontinence will actually talk to their doctor about it. So although the problem is out there, most women just deal with it. Most women have been taught, well, this is what happens when you give birth. This is what happens because you're a female. So patients think they just have to deal with it. That's not the right way to look at it.
And so knowing it's fairly common, doctor, based on what you just stated, what is the impact on women's health when they're suffering from this?
Very significant. If you look from a financial standpoint, it's almost a $20 billion industry that's spent on dealing with incontinence. What I found in patients dealing with incontinence, it really truly impacts the quality of their life. Women with incontinence who don't have it managed, they deal with depression, anxiety. Many of my patients, social isolation. They don't leave their house. They're afraid to leave their house. They're afraid to go out. And if they do go out, they'll go to the bathroom before they leave. They'll go to the bathroom when they get to where they're going. They'll go to the bathroom before they leave to go back home. And then as soon as they get home, they're back in the bathroom. So most patients will choose not to go out. The fear of, do I smell like urine? It's a major, major impact on the overall quality of life. Close to a third of the women with incontinence will also have leakage of urine during intercourse. And so then that can create a separation between them and their spouses. And then finally, the physical ramifications of incontinence, where the leakage of urine or wearing pads, how it can affect the skin of that area, can lead to ulcers and infection. And finally, it's been shown that it's 2 times more common for women with incontinence to wind up having falls and fractures.
And so, doctor, what are the causes of female urinary incontinence?
There are many different causes. Some would be age. Obesity is definitely related to incontinence. And in fact, there's over a 4-fold greater risk for urinary incontinence based on BMI. Parity, how many children a patient has had. Whether it's vaginal deliveries or C-sections, vaginal deliveries definitely increase the risk for urinary incontinence. Family history, genetics play a role. Dietary behaviors, depending on what someone drinks, smoking, constipation, high-impact sports, certain medications can increase the risk for urinary incontinence. Neuromuscular problems such as diabetes, stroke, multiple sclerosis. So there are many different types or many different causes for urinary incontinence, and that's what needs to be sorted out to figure out the best way to manage a patient.
And are there more than one type of incontinence, or is it just one broad sense of diagnosis for you?
There are many different types of incontinence. However, the three biggest ones, the three most common types of incontinence would be, number one, stress urinary incontinence. The second would be urgency urinary incontinence, and then finally mixed urinary incontinence. There are also many different subtypes of urinary incontinence, but those three would be the biggest, most common that I deal with in my practice. Stress urinary incontinence is the typical laugh, cough, sneeze, run, jump. A patient will have leakage of urine. Urgency urinary incontinence is the gotta go, and can't make it to the bathroom. That strong sense of urgency followed by the loss of urine. And the mixed incontinence would be a combination of the stress and urge together.
In terms of diagnosis, it seems fairly straightforward if someone is dealing with an issue like this. But how are you going about diagnosing it when patients are coming into your office?
The very first thing is a thorough history. What we're looking at is a medical history, what types of surgeries they've had, their gynecologic history. neurological history and medications. So by looking at all those different parts helps in my head start thinking, what direction are we going in? What type of incontinence they're going to be, they probably have. The next step would be, again, a very thorough examination to look at the structures of the pelvis to see if there's a reason for the incontinence. At a bare minimum, we always want to get a urinalysis to make sure that patient doesn't have a urinary tract infection. Most times, urinary tract infections have that frequency, the urgency to get to the bathroom, and it can have incontinence associated with it. So a urinalysis. Another thing I like to do is what's called a post-void residual, where we want to measure how much is the patient truly emptying her bladder, because then that can change the diagnosis of what type of incontinence she's dealing with. What I like to do is, in a patient who has a history of incontinence or complains of incontinence, I have them do a 3-day voiding diary. In that diary, they're going to record what they drink, how much they drink, how often they go to the bathroom. When they do go to the bathroom, how much are they urinating? And then are there associated signs of urgency to get to the toilet or leakage that is associated with some type of activity? During the physical exam, one of the things I like looking at, because with incontinence, we're specifically focusing on the urethra and the bladder. The urethra is just a small little tube that connects the bladder to the outside world. So one of the things that's called what I look for is urethral hypermobility. Does that urethra move when the patient bears down or cough? Because that, again, can be a telltale sign for a certain type of incontinence. At the same time during the exam, what I'll have the patient do is cough. And if she coughs and there's a spontaneous loss of leakage, that is a great indicator for stress incontinence. And then finally, what I have a patient do is a symptom severity questionnaire, 6, 7, 8 questions that they mark that, again, focuses their complaints that allows me to make a diagnosis. So you can see it's a lot of is history taking and physical examination to make the diagnosis. And in fact, most of the time, 80% of the time, the diagnosis can be made just on physical exam and a solid history.
And so now that we've diagnosed, what are the treatment options at this point?
The treatment options vary. And what I found, again, in my career is the first thing I'll ask patients is how much is it bothering you? If it's not too bad, then you don't have to do anything. I think when patients come in to see me, they always assume the worst. So one of the comments that I make is I have to reassure the patient they don't have cancer. They don't have to do anything about it. It's how bad their symptoms are. So for some patients, and one of the ways that I can figure out how bad the problem is to them is how many pads are they using? I have some patients use 1 or 2 liners a day. And then I have some patients who wear diapers and change them 4 or 5 times a day. So the severity will help guide how much they want to proceed with treatment. So what are the treatment options? Well, the treatment depends on what type of incontinence they have. Most of the time, with some proper education, the patient can do the treatment themselves. So as we mentioned earlier with the voiding diary, if I find that a patient is drinking pots and pots of coffee, one of the things you can do is cut back on coffee. Now, I know there's data out there to suggest that caffeine doesn't, it may or may not have an impact on incontinence, but what I found in my experience is the patients who decrease their caffeine, it can actually make a big difference. And in fact, there's a study that suggests that a single cup of coffee can increase incontinence. So changing dietary behaviors, what they're drinking, anything that is carbonated, coffee or tea with or without caffeine and alcohol, those are the first things that I look for in a diary just that we can start changing immediately. Another thing that I like to do is what's called bladder retraining or bladder drills. And in that voiding diary, one of the things they have to put is how often are they going to the bathroom. So if I find a patient's going to the bathroom every hour, what we like to do is instead of going every hour, look at your watch and you're not allowed to go to the bathroom unless it's been an hour and a half. And then it's been 2 hours. And slowly but surely, they stretch out their bladder to hold more and more urine to decrease the amount of times they're going to the bathroom. So some things are learned behaviors. I had a patient one time who every time she let her dogs out, she would go to the bathroom. By doing the diary, she realized, oh, I didn't realize I was doing that. So these learned behaviors, or like with my kids when they were little, you have to go to the bathroom. And the sisters would all go together to the bathroom and I would tell them, whoever has to go, go, but the rest of you just stand there. You know, you don't have to go because everyone's going. Because those learned behaviors is what essentially will shrink the capacity, how much the bladder can hold. And now once the bladder gets to that 1 hour mark, it starts signaling to the brain, hey, we have to go to the bathroom. So it's just that reinforced behavior that causes someone to go so often. So those are the things that can be fixed pretty easily with proper motivation from the patient. The other option that's out there is medication. And I'm not a real big pill pusher, but medication does work. And what the medication does is chemically get that bladder to relax from spasming, sending the message to the brain, hey, we have to go to the bathroom. So medication is good. It does do its job. And like anything else, there are side effects. So we have to be very careful what types of medications we give patients. So with medication, with the bladder retraining, there's close to a 75-80% chance of improvement just with those two simple steps. And then, of course, we talked about lifestyle changes, weight loss. That's a huge one. So just by losing 10% of body weight can improve incontinence symptoms by as much as 50%. So again, a proper healthy lifestyle always makes a difference. After medication, now we start getting to some more of the sophisticated things. So that would be the medical management of incontinence, specifically with stress incontinence, the laugh, cough, sneeze. If these techniques don't help, which I recommend everyone do physical therapy, bladder drills, and what they're drinking. But if that's not enough, then we move into the surgical realm. And with stress incontinence, the laugh, cough, sneeze, the next step would be what's called a sling procedure. And that's just a small piece of mesh that is put in the pelvic area underneath the urethra to help support the urethra from moving and causing leakage. The procedure itself takes about 20 minutes. It's outpatient. I've been doing slings since 2001. They're fantastic and they work. In the late 2000s, there was a big concern about using synthetic material or slings in the vagina. And fortunately, slings are acceptable in the pelvis and are still being used. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, as well as the American Urogynecologic Society, all endorse slings as a form of treatment for stress incontinence. So hopefully there's still not the concern that slings are bad or mesh is bad. I would joke with patients saying, I know mesh is a four-letter word, but they work. The success rate of slings is the high 70, low 80%. And I found in my clinical experience, they work and they work very well. If a patient has tried behavioral therapy and medication for her urinary urgency with incontinence, the next thing I would offer is a procedure called posterior tibial nerve stimulation, or PTNS. And essentially what it is an acupuncture needle is placed behind the ankle bone, and it's connected to a little generator that sends electrical impulses up the nerve towards the bladder. And nobody's really sure of why this works, but the thought is electrical impulse will be sent to the bladder, and what this does is calms the bladder down. This is something that can be done in the office. It's about a 30-minute procedure. The patient would undergo six treatments, and if by the sixth treatment there's improvement, then we would continue and finish with 12. If after six treatments, the studies show that it may or may not work. Another form of surgical management for urgent incontinence would be Botox. And what that is we would inject the Botox into the wall of the bladder. That can be done in the office, can be done in the operating room. And the thought with Botox is that it would paralyze the wall of the bladder so it doesn't spasm. If it doesn't spasm, you don't get the sense of urgency, and thereby it decreases frequency, urgency, and incontinence. One of the downsides, the risk of Botox, is there is a very small 5% chance that in the process of paralyzing the bladder, it could put the patient into retention and they would have to catheterize themselves to drain their bladder. The last surgical offering for urgent incontinence would be what's called sacroneuromodulation. And again, the exact mechanism of action, how it works, is not known. But again, it's along the electrical line of basically calming down the bladder, breaking that connection between the brain and the bladder, suggesting frequency and urgency. In this procedure, it is done in the operating room, and a small wire is placed through the back at the level of the sacral nerve root number 3. then this is attached to a generator. So this is something that's more of a permanent solution as opposed to PTNS, which is done in the office. Success rate, again, is high 70% success rate. It works great. The little battery pack that's attached to the lead can last for 15, 18 years, depending on the use. And I've had tremendous success with the sacral neuromodulation. It's very exciting to see a patient come in tears saying they don't wear pads. They can sleep through the night. They don't have to put garbage bags on their bed because they're tired of doing their laundry, you know, washing their sheets every morning, the next morning. It's the procedure works. All these procedures work. It's nice to know that we have things to offer patients.
So if women are listening right now and feel like they want to come and see you, what is that process like? And is there a referral needed to do so?
If you're concerned with incontinence, all you need to do is make an appointment and come and see me. We'll sit down. We'll take our time. We'll get things sorted out. And as there are so many different options available, and I personally believe that why should anyone have incontinence? Why should you leak and have it affect the quality of your life? So a simple phone call will get you in the office, will get you fixed, and get you enjoying life again.
Again, a special thank you to Dr. Thomas Minnick on this edition of Health Dose, a podcast from My Michigan Health focusing on different issues related to your health. As always, if you have health concerns, you should check in with your primary care provider. If you need help finding a primary care provider, go to mymichigan.org/doctors.